People talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. Tonight I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and talking that to me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and fought and died to keep. If you don't love it, leave it. This song I'm singing, be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You run down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people, and of course, those are the European founding settler people, the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. would you believe this? In some countries, the word mother is being replaced. In fact, in Canada, in the federal government rules from laid down by the Trust Fund Kid, that's our Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, mandate federal civil servants to use terms like parent rather than guardian, rather than mother or father. Putin says, in some countries, the word mother is being replaced. I hope we never have that in Russia. Amen. This is actually part of a bank regulation in Washington, D.C. When you open a new bank account for a child, you are asked to specify guardian one or guardian two. And the bank throws a hissy fit and will not accept an application if you insist on mother or father. Now, I'm a parent. And I'm not my child's, of course they're growing up now, but I'm not my child's guardian, one or two. Guardian suggests a sort of a legal role for a child whose parents are dead. I'm not a guardian. I'm a parent. I'm a father. Now, not a mother. My mother's a different function. The healthy attitudes seem to be maintained, not in the previously Christian West, but by people like Vladimir Putin. And, you know, I might not have said that 20 years ago. Our ruling class, with some exceptions, has become so utterly degenerate, so utterly in the thrall of the cultural Marxists and the tradition haters, that basic common sense has gone out the window. And tradition, all in favor of some insane gender neutrality. But the genders are not neutral. The genders are distinct. And much as this may forever pain them to acknowledge it, that's the way God made it. Yeah, yes, that's right, God. I said that horrible word, didn't I? The G word. President Vladimir Putin remarked at a recent Kremlin meeting that some countries are replacing the word mother out of concern for political correctness, something he hoped would never happen in Russia. Putin was referring to a law passed in France earlier this year, which mandates that schools refrain from using mother and father, and instead use parent one and parent two. Hi, are you parent one or parent two? Well, up until just really a whisper ago, there was no confusion or no problem, right? You look at the individual in front of you, and hey, that's a man. Well, that, you must be the father, right? And you, or you look at the individual in front of you, and it's a woman. Well, you are, yeah, I know, gay, that horrible word out. You are the child's mother, right? No problem. Well, of course, in the world of cultural Marxism, there is a problem. Because, well, there aren't supposed to be any sexual differences. Sex is just a social construct. We just kind of made it up as we went along. You know, the frightening thing about this, it's, you know, on one hand, you might almost be seen as comical. On the other hand, it's appalling. And it suggests severe mental confusion. And, you know, and when you can't even get the sex right, you know, what else follows? Well, perhaps it's not surprising that France is being invaded by the Muslim Third World with the absolute connivance of their political class, with the exception of the Front National. You know, when you can't get the basics right, The more complicated stuff, it gets hard to take care of. Anyway, back to France. According to government MP Valérie Petit, the change is necessary because using father and mother is old-fashioned and doesn't meet with social equality. Yeah, or I guess what, the roles are interchangeable. Well, I haven't yet seen a man give birth to a child. I've seen some odd things, but that one hasn't happened. According to Brian McDonald, a reporter, Vladimir Putin said, you said the word mother can't be replaced. It turns out perhaps it can. In some countries, they now have parent number one and parent number two. And he went on to say, as I've already quoted, I hope we never have that in Russia. And they won't, as long as Vladimir Putin is in charge. During a meeting for the Council of Inter-Ethnic Relations, Kremlin advisory group, Putin told delegates, you said the word mother can't be replaced. It turns out perhaps it can. In some countries, it's parent number one, parent number two. I hope we'll never have that in Russia. Officials attending the conference laughed, but for many in the West, we are told to accept such absurdities in silence, lest we be punished for a myriad of potential thought crimes. It's not that funny. And we live in, what's that? The free world. Yeah, well, that's what we were told. The free world. That good-natured response masked the looming uneasiness that yet another crazy train has departed the Western Station and is on a collision course with Russia, as well as the rest of the world, said Robert Bridge. Will Russia be able to hold out forever against the globalist ultra-liberal agenda that's now threatening the planet? As we previously highlighted, a discussion on one of Russia's most popular TV shows about a boy in Scotland who was suspended for saying there are only two genders underscored just how people in Eastern Europe are completely bewildered by the West's obsession with identity politics, and it's increasingly with the West's madness. Back in June, Vladimir Putin commented on a similar topic, asserting that liberalism was in its death throes thanks to multiculturalism. The ruling elites have broken away from the people, Putin told the Financial Times, adding that the so-called liberal idea has outlived its purpose. And I think he's right. I'm not sure even liberalism is the right term for what's been happening, but the common sense is being replaced by something pretty close to madness. Gender equality. Well, the genders are not equal, as in the same, and they can't be. And the only way they can be is by twisting people's selves into a pretzel, a ridiculous pretzel. That's what is in fact being happening. One of the increasingly worthwhile American commentators is Tucker Carlson, and I'm going to play a clip from a recent Tucker Carlson show.
Left-wing extremists are becoming, of all things, prosecutors. They're getting elected on an agenda that favors criminals over decent people and undermines the rule of law. How is this happening? Is there suddenly a national groundswell of support for crime and lawlessness? No, no, there's not. Most Americans believe in order. They always have. What's happening is an end run around democracy. A small group of left-wing mega donors is drowning local elections with tidal waves of cash. As it turns out, that works, and it's not very hard to do. We've already told you in some detail about how Hungarian-born billionaire George Soros got a pro-crime radical called Larry Krasner elected district attorney in Philadelphia. Violence in that city immediately and predictably went up. That's what happens when you stop enforcing the law. People die, and in Philadelphia they have. By any measure, the Larry Krasner experiment has been an ugly disaster. And yet, and this tells you everything about where we are right now, many progressives see Philadelphia and what Krasner has done there as a model for the rest of the country. They'd like to bring it to your town, and they're trying to do that. Last month, a longtime left-wing activist called Chesa Boudin was elected DA in San Francisco. Boudin ran on the promise to make an already filthy and disorderly city even dirtier and more chaotic. He pledged to effectively legalize prostitution, public urination, and living on the sidewalk. He dismissed the prosecution of criminal gang members as, quote, explicitly racist, though he didn't explain how. He promised to do away with cash bail entirely. Just in case anyone missed the point of all of this, supporters at Boudin's election party chanted, F the police. Even in America's most flamboyantly liberal city, this was too much for a lot of people. When you tear down the justice system, only the criminals thrive. Everyone knows that. Yet in the end, Chesa Boudin was elected anyway, only by a narrow margin. How do you do that? Well, with the committed backing of Silicon Valley's ruling class. Boudin won the support of people like Caitlin Krieger. She's the wife of Instagram's co-founder. Krieger, who is a living parody of a silly, out-of-touch rich lady, gave Boudin $27,000. Now, it's hard to imagine Krieger would have done that if there was a possibility she might have to live with the consequences of it. But, of course, there was never any chance of that. Krieger is a billionaire. She can live behind gates, protected by her own police force, if she wants, and maybe she does. The same is true for people like Elizabeth Simons, the daughter of hedge fund billionaire James Simons. Simons gave Chesa Boudin $25,000. If you sense a trend here, that's because there is a trend here. Scratch the surface and you'll find that the destruction of California has been paid for by the very rich. The guilt-racked heirs of inherited fortunes have long been a major force in left-wing politics, of course. The more they despise themselves, the more left-wing they tend to be. What's new is the burgeoning coastal billionaire class. Now, people who amass fortunes incrementally over time through hard work and innovation typically have conservative political instincts. But people who've made huge piles of quick cash in finance or technology usually do not. people like that understand they've hit the lottery. They can't say that out loud, of course. They have to pretend that they earned it all, fair and square, really. But deep down, they know that's a crock. They're winners in an awful scam. They know that, and they feel bad about it. So to salve their consciences, they fund radical causes designed to destroy the very society that made them rich. Sending money to chase a boudin is the equivalent of paying a secular indulgence. You pay the price in the end. This is how California got Proposition 47, passed in 2014. Prop 47 downgraded a long list of felonies to misdemeanors, including any theft of under $950. Since it became law, crime has surged in California. On the Bay Area Rapid Transit System, for example, violent crime has more than doubled. Murders, assaults, robberies, and rapes have jumped by 115%. The city of San Francisco, meanwhile, now has more property crime than any place its size in this country. Why? Well, because criminals understand the rules. They know they can't be punished. Authorities in Sacramento say that members of shoplifting rings bring calculators into stores to make sure their thefts come in under $950. The law allows them to steal with impunity. It's grotesque, and it's incredibly destructive. How did it happen? You know the answer. The moneyed left bought the election. George Soros put in almost $2 million behind Proposition 47. B. Wayne Hughes Jr., son of a billionaire storage tycoon, gave another $1.2 million. Netflix CEO Reed Hastings chipped in $250,000, as did venture capitalist Nick Pritzker. Former Facebook president Sean Parker gave $100,000 to the effort. Carrie Tuna, wife of Facebook co-founder Dustin Moskovitz, gave $150,000. Moskovitz went to Harvard with Mark Zuckerberg, a fact that allowed him to become a billionaire while still in his 20s. Moskovitz and his wife are now reportedly worth more than $12 billion. Now, if that sounds like a lot, possibly even an obscene amount for a 35-year-old who's never really done anything, Moskovitz agrees with you, or pretends to agree anyway. Quote, Carrie and I are stewards of this capital, he told Business Insider a few years ago. It's pooled up right around us now, but it belongs to the world. Of course, just because all that money belongs to the world doesn't mean the world gets to decide how it is spent. Dustin and Carrie Moskovitz make that call. Like so many in our ruling class, they could care less about what happens to ordinary people in the normal parts of America. Thanks to the projects they fund, the country's streets are dirtier and more dangerous. But within the gated tranquility of their world, the Moskovitzes feel like incredibly good people, empathetic, virtuous, enlightened people. And that's what matters. In fact, it's all that matters.
Excellent commentary by Tucker Carlson. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on ResistanceRadio.com. An excellent commentary as well on this strange phenomenon of the ultra-rich funding utterly destructive policies. And I think that Tucker Carlson's comment was bang on, that they don't have to live with what they do. and a phenomenon that also I found odd when I first became aware of it, when I was reading material from the John Birch Society in my late teens and 20s, and that was the Russian Revolution was funded, or I should say the communist takeover of the Russian Revolution, and it became no longer actually a Russian Revolution, but essentially a Jewish revolution that was what installed the communists. But anyway, it came up to me as a great surprise that this revolution, revolutionary movements, were funded by rich people. And some big Jewish bankers in the West. The Warburgs and the Kuhns, in my naivety at the time, I thought, well, why would rich capitalists fund communism? you know, it's a system that theoretically would take their wealth. You know, the theoretically, communism says it's about equality, so yeah, they would take from the rich, or actually destroy the rich and give to the poor. You know, that's theory. Why would you fund that? Well, it turns out that, of course, communism isn't really about, or wasn't really about, equalizing things, taking land from the landowners and giving it to the peasants. Of course, it turned out it was going to be all about collectivization. So the poor peasants who might have thought, oh, we might get land, turned out, no, you're going to be a slave on state-owned land. Well, actually, you're told you own it, but you actually don't. You don't own it. You have to do what you're told by the new ruling class, who are the commissars. And so, of course, communism turned out to be a complete fraud. And what it turned out was that it was all about power. Now, that's what it was about. Power. So, as I said, it came as a bit of a surprise to me at first that you know, the very rich would, or some of the very rich would fund a revolution. But then it turned out it really was all about power. Here's an interesting thing you might not have noticed. If you tune into CNN, it has been wall to wall for days and days about the moves by the United States House of Representatives to impeach Donald Trump. And this has occupied much of the time. It would appear that the House will vote on articles of impeachment. They're in the process of drafting those articles, but it looks as though they will vote on them sometime probably next week. Probably they will vote impeachment, and then there will be an impeachment trial in the Senate. Here's a very interesting information passed on to me by Sarah Perry. Snarky bisexual Jewish woman says barren cannot be barren. With two R's. Why is the impeachment circus run by Jews, chaired by Jews, and with damn near all Jews as witnesses? Democrat constitutional lawyer Carlin attacks white people in a speech. We've seen a good deal of her. And there's, of course, Nadler.
Country, because we have more reason than they do to love America. The rich, pampered, prodigal, sanctimonious, incurious, white, straight sons of the powerful do pretty well everywhere in the world, and they always have. But what about us? Snarky, bisexual, Jewish women who want the freedom to say what we think, read what we want, and love whom we do.
That's one of the, I believe she was an expert witness, a constitutional lawyer, Pamela S. Carlin. Nadler, the chairman, I believe, of the Justice Committee. Another one of the experts was Noah Feldman. He was a Harvard law professor. Pamela S. Carlin is a Stanford law professor. Michael Gerhardt was a University of North Carolina professor. All Jews. Now some people will say, well, why would you mention that? Well, Jews constitute only 2% of America's population. Why is it that this really, it's an attempted coup against Donald Trump. Why is this so heavily Jewish? Perhaps we have a there's something there here. Here's the Jews of the impeachment process, a visual guide, and there being a pastor who's even called this whole impeachment coup exactly that, a Jewish coup. These are articles from the Forward. Of course, Adam Schiff, the chairman of the Intelligence Committee, same family name as one of the major Jewish bankers of the so-called Russian Revolution, Jacob Schiff. This is really... once it was pointed out to me, really rather frightening. What exactly is going on here? That, of course, it will never be discussed in the mainline press. There's a representative from the United Nations. Before I do that, George Soros. Now, he is a major funder, and you heard that in the Tucker Carlson broadcast. He's a major funder of left-wing causes throughout the West, and particularly in Europe and in America, of the immigration invasion. He's a huge fan of our replacement. Russia has banned a George Soros charity as what? A security threat. And I certainly think any nationalist government would see anything and machinations by Soros as indeed just that. Russia has banned a pro-democracy charity founded by hedge fund billionaire George Soros, saying the organization posed a threat to both state security and the Russian constitution. In a statement released this Monday, Russia's general prosecutor's office said two branches of Soros's charity network, the Open Society Foundations and the Open Society Institute, will be placed on a stop list of four non-governmental organizations whose activities have been deemed undesirable by the Russian state. It was found that the activities of the Open Society Foundation and the Open Society Institute Assistance Foundation represent a threat to the foundations of the constitutional system of the Russian Federation and the security of the state. Soros, who's best known for his namesake Soros Fund Management Firm, originally founded the Open Society Foundation to help countries transition from communism. Yeah, but transition to what? The charity now funds projects aimed at democracy building across the globe. It's widely believed that a lot of the so-called Arab Spring that resulted in utter chaos was funded by George Soros. Open Society Foundation first came into trouble with the Russian government when it hinted that it might ban the foundation along with a number of other pro-democracy organizations accused of launching soft aggression within the country. The billionaire also came under fire in his Hungarian homeland in October when state politicians accused Soros and his charity of supporting illegal immigration. That's a big thing with Soros. Loves immigration. Basically, he loves the replacement of white people. Open Society Foundation has criticized Hungary's treatment of refugees, while the billionaire suggested migrants receive $16,000 per year to help cover housing, health care, and education. So it has been a major source of anti-white subversion. And I find it very healthy that Russia would seek to limit its influence. Now, I started this item a few moments ago. Canada has recently been visited by a fellow by the name of Luis Almagro, and he's the Secretary General of the Organization of American States, and he's got some comments about how we're dealing with our Native women, Indians, and there was a wildly expensive inquiry, commission, took place the last 2 years, and it was the murdered and missing Indian, although they now call it Indigenous Women Foundation. Inquiry. Well, it came up with a lot of recommendations and a lot of wild talk about genocide and so on. Now, what lies behind this murdered and missing Indian women? Well, it turns out that Indian women are murdered at many times the rate that white women are murdered at. And considerable numbers of Indian women have disappeared and never been found. So this was an issue that for a number of years the radical Indian movement had wanted a big inquiry about. Well, finally, the former Prime Minister Stephen Harper very wisely turned those demands down. But when the trust fund kid, that's Justin Trudeau, came to power in 2015, he made a reconciliation with Indians one of his major themes. So he was quick to grant this demand that there be a national inquiry. Well, of course, it turned out to be a complete shambles. It took a long time to get off the ground. There was all sorts of resignations of staff and commissioners and infighting and it was a complete mess. And it started way late. They couldn't organize themselves out of a paper bag. Well, finally, they came out with recommendations, and lo and behold, the accusation was made that the murdered and disappeared, the phenomenon of murdered and disappeared Indian women was a form of genocide. Well, let's get a grip. Genocide is the organized destruction of another race or people, right? Now that's, I think, a decent working definition. Okay, well, for that to be a genocide, then somebody would have to have organized it. And so the implied accusation is that, I guess it's us, we're the ones to blame. So the idea is white people are going out there deliberately murdering large numbers of Indian women for the purpose of destroying the people there. And somehow those who've disappeared have been made to disappear because of, you've got it, white people. how would that be? If they haven't yet been found, how do we... How do we know why they disappeared, or how they disappeared, or who was responsible, if anybody was responsible? in the midst of all the hysterical accusations, a few facts emerged, though not necessarily from the inquiry. The RCMP a couple of years ago published a study of the number of Indian women murdered from 1980 to 2014. It turned out there was about 1,100 countrywide. And in terms of the Indian population, this was several times the rate. I think it was six times the rate of the murder of white women. Okay, so there's no doubt a phenomenon of Indian women being at greater risk of being murdered. The RCMP found that of the 1,100 murder cases, roughly, 90% or so had been solved, which was about the same solution rate as for the murder of white women. So the idea that the murder of Indian women somehow didn't concern law enforcement, or they didn't take it seriously, as sometimes they were accused of doing, turned out not to be true. Okay, well, what was the cause of the murder of these women? Well, over 75% were murdered by, get this, their husband, their boyfriend, their lover, or, in other words, a fellow Indian. That they weren't being stalked by white men. White men weren't prowling the reservations to find an Indian woman to murder her. Also, and this may come as a complete shock, drug abuse and alcohol abuse was a factor, again, in about 75% of the cases. So when you shake it all down, what it amounts to is there is a problem, yes, no doubt about it, a problem of Indian women being murdered in numbers disproportionate to the share of the population. Murdered by their own men! Well, yeah, there's a problem, but it's not colonialism or white society or European values. It is a lack of respect by their own men, or it's, you know, some of their own men, for their own people. That's the problem. It's not our problem. I'm not saying we shouldn't be sympathetic, but, you know, it's not our problem. Anyway, I've said this official from the Organization of American States. The Secretary General said Canada's taking too long to act on the final report of the National Inquiry into Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women. Louisa Malgro said he received an evasive response from Ottawa to his proposal earlier this year to set an expert panel to investigate the findings. We have another panel to investigate the panel. Well, that's a great make-work project, but and he said, including the conclusion that the murders and disappearance of Indigenous women in Canada constitutes genocide. When I was going over this item today, and it's a little crude, but it's bullshit. It really is bullshit. That's not genocide. Genocide would have to be the organized murder by another race, that would be presumably white people, of these of Indian women to, in some way, what wipe out the tribe? But it's absurd. And then it turns out most of the murders are committed by their own people. I mean, this is nutty territory. But this isn't nuttiness coming from street activists. Now, that's, you know, bad enough. Or, in Canada, government-funded activists. No, it's this meddling idiot, the Secretary General of the Organization of American States, Luis Almagro. The inquiry's final report concluded that Canada's laws and institutions violate Indigenous rights, amounting to nothing less than the deliberate, often covert, campaign of genocide against Indigenous women, girls, and LGBTQ people. Trudeau initially, at least, did not go along with the term genocide, but later did acknowledge the term. So once you give over on the language, more nonsense will follow. But listen to that conclusion. This report was just is a crock of garbage. It said that Canada's laws and institutions violate Indigenous rights, amounting to nothing less than the deliberate, often covert campaign of genocide against Indigenous women, girls, and LGBTQ people. I'm not sure how the LGBTQ people came into this, but that was just throwing in, I guess, for additional political correctness. So the murder, the phenomenon of murdered and missing Indian women reflects a subtle genocide. Well, the state's not murdering them. Nobody's suggesting that it's police officers or soldiers or civil servants that are off murdering or causing Native women to disappear. These conclusions are nutty. Almagro said, Canada, I'm sorry, no, it turns out Chrystia Freeland told Almagro that Canada is committed to addressing the systemic causes of violence against Indigenous women. Systemic causes. That means the system is causing it.
No.
Certain men are causing it. Mostly, 75% of the cases, Native men. It's not the system that's doing it. And what this would seem to be, among other things, will be another excuse for more demands for you get more money. No. I don't think we need more money to solve the problem. We need leadership from the Native people, from their chiefs and so on, to tell them in, or to encourage them in, not to be beating up on and murdering their own women. That's the reality. Now, of course, that's not that sexy, is it? You know, and of course, it doesn't lead to white guilt, which is the bottom line. We're responsible. That's always, of course, what they're trying to get across. We're the bad guys. Anything that goes wrong with the Native people, it's us. It's genocide. Well, I think we've got to stop falling for that, and we've got to start injecting some very painful common sense. I'm going to take my musical break right now, and I've been promoting Ray Stevens for a while. He's just a wickedly insightful comedian, and this is the Global Warming Song.
Now here we have two real pioneers embarking upon a new career, capitalizing on this global warming hype. Yeah, they're the ones that brought you the left-handed hammer and tried to market a recycled pamper. You could say the Gullible brothers have always been the entrepreneurial type. But this next harebrained Gullible venture could be earmarked as the major clincher as to whether or not they'll be living it up in their retirement age. They put all they had into one bankroll, bought a bunch of land down at the South Pole, eagerly awaiting the impending doom of climate change, thereby being in the catbird seat in a new Florida. And I'm all for working hard to keep this planet clean, but man-made global warming just don't make no sense to me. But if you insist on buying into this media false alarm, I know a couple of guys in wheel and deal in frozen farms.
Next up on the Real Estate Show, we have the Gullible Brothers, live via satellite from the east coast of Antarctica. Hello, boys, are you on the line?
Yeah, I'm Gary, Barry Gullible. This is my younger brother, Justice Gullible. Thanks for having us on the show.
You bet. What actually do you have available in the way of land?
We got this beautiful home sites available, which ocean front once the ice melts a little bit. It's cold. And now we've got some beautiful farms that are more inland. We lose about 40 feet of this snow. Oh, Lord.
I'm all for working hard to keep this planet clean. But man-made global warming just don't make no sense to me. But if you insist on buying into this media false alarm, I know a couple of guys who wheel and deal in frozen farms.
Well, boys, what's the weather like down there? Sounds cold.
Well, not too bad. 62 below, but at the moment wind chills is 100 below. But spirits are high. We've been told it's definitely going to rise in a little while. There's records and 7 feet of snow and all. But Al Gore said it's going to be okay. Oh, Lord. Justice, run. And here comes a polar bear.
I'm off of working hard just to keep this planet clean. But man-made global warming just don't make no sense to me. But if you insist on buying into this media false alarm, I know a couple of guys who wheel and deal in frozen farms. Oh,
well, we'd just like to thank the Gullibles for joining us today. Barry Gullible, any last words for those who may be looking to relocate once the rest of the world floods? Oh, my goodness. Okay, Justice, how about you?
I can't feel my feet.
He really has a wicked sense of humor. Here's another song by like Ray Stevens, the Mississippi Squirrel Revival. The Mississippi Squirrel Revival. Well, actually, this is. I'll have to get it. Well, for reasons I cannot quite explain, I'll try this one more time. The Mississippi Squirrel Revival.
Kid, I'd take a trip every summer down to Mississippi, visit my granny and her aunt in Bellum World. I'd run barefooted all day long, climbing trees free as song. One day, I happened to catch myself a squirrel. Well, I stuffed him down in an old shoebox, punched a couple of holes in the top. When Sunday came, I snuck him in the church. I sit way back in the very last pew, showing him to my good buddy Hugh. When that squirrel got loose, went totally berserk. What happened next is hard to tell. Some thought it was heaven, some thought it was hell. But the fact that something was among us, I ain't even see. As the choir sang, I surrender all, the squirrel ran up hard, Newland's cover off. Hard leaped to his feet, said, something's got a hold on me. Yeah! The day the squirrel went berserk in the First Self-Righteous Church, in that sleeping little town of Pascagoula. It was a fight for survival that broke out in the battle. They were jumping the pews and shouting, hallelujah. Well, hard hit the owl dancing and screaming. Some thought he had religion, others thought he had a demon. Hard thought he had a weed eater loose and screwed the moon. He fell to his knees to plead and beg, and that squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room. way down to the Amen view, where sat Sister Bertha better than you, and watching all the commotion with sadistic glee. Should have seen that look in her eyes when that squirrel jumped her garters and crossed her thighs. She jumped to her feet and said, "Lord, have mercy on me." As that squirrel made laps inside her dress, she began to cry, then to confess the sins and make a sailor blush to shame. She told of gossip and church dissension, but the thing that got the most attention was when she talked about her love life. And then she started naming names the day the squirrel went to dessert in the first self-righteous church in that sleeping little town of Pascagoula. It was a fight for survival. And shouting, "Hallelujah!" Seven deacons and the pastor got saved, and $25,000 was raised, and 50 volunteered for missions in the Congo on the spot. And even without an invitation, there were at least 500 rededications, and we all got rebaptized whether we needed it or not. Now you've heard the Bible story, I guess, how he parted the waters for Moses to pass. Oh, the miracle God has wrought in this old world. The one I'll remember till my dying day is how he put that church back on the narrow way with a half-crazed Mississippi squirrel. The day the squirrel went berserk in the first self-righteous church in that sleeping little town of Pascagoula. It was a fight for survival that broke out in the Bible. They were jumping the pews and shouting, "Hallelujah!" The day the squirrel went berserk
Ray Stevens is just such as a zany and inspired entertainer. And I'm going to play another Ray Stevens song. This is his Hot Chili Cook-Off. Ray Stevens, Hot Chili Cook-Off.
I write to you for the last time from my deathbed, oh dear mother. My health is gone. I'm fading fast and I fear I'll not recover. I've lost 100 pounds, my hair, my sight, and this illness had its nexus. The day I judged the red hot chili cook-off in Jalapeno, Texas. Well, as you know, in Tennessee, you fed us normal things. Yeah, like Tabasco seasoned barbecue and spicy chicken wings. But I've got a friend down here in Texas who's a chili cook-off judge. And on the day of the statewide cook-off, he lay sick and could not budge. "I'm sicker than a dog," he said. "You'll have to take my place. All you do is pick the chili you like after giving them all a taste." So, of course, I did what I had to do to help out my old friend. But that decision ruined my life and brought me to this sorry end. Do not eat Texas chili, mama, or you will surely die. We'll show you a mention of Texas chili to me. I will tell you why. Just the thought will fire up memories that will wreck my solar plexus. On the day I judged the red hot chili cook-off in Jalapeno, Texas. They led me to the judge's stand and sat me in my place. Put 3 bowls of chili in front of me, just to sample, just to taste. Number one was dragon's breath, and it had such a nice aroma. I took a big old bite that nearly slipped into a coma. Oh, sweet Lord, what is this stuff? My uvula's on fire. My ears are ringing and my nose is running and my feet are starting to perspire. Then number two was called flamethrower, and it was not his name. One taste, my eyes, ears, nose, and throat all shot out long blue flame.
Help somebody, call 911. I don't think I can breathe. I can't seem to catch my breath. All I can do is wheeze. Then I heard somebody screaming uncontrollably. I turned to see who it was, and Lord have mercy, it is me. The winner was simply Charlie's Chili. Sounded innocent enough, but it knocked me backwards off the stand with one taste of the stuff. I got up running, looking for a doctor or an ice cold bottle of water. I downed a keg of beer and six snow cones, and it only made me hotter. It's been a year now, and I can only sip a smoothie now and then. If I try some solid food, the flames flare up again. I'm gone, it burned and blistered from my mouth down to my colon. And one little skin that's left at all is inflamed and badly swollen. So I write to you, dear mother, just to say goodbye. And to warn you and the family of one thing before I die. Do not eat Texas chili, it'll put you in the ground. And even if you should survive, you won't be able to sit down. Do not eat Texas chili, mama, you will surely die. Don't even mention Texas chili to me, I will tell you why. Just a thought will fire up memories that'll wreck my solar plexus. Other day I judged the red hot chili cooked off in jalapeno, Texas.
Another one by Ray Stevens. This is Paul Fromm. Not we need more. Same time, midnight Eastern time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Our fair dominion now extends from Cape Race to Nootka Sound. May peace forever be our lot and plenteous store abound. And may those ties of love be ours, which discord cannot sever, and flourish green o'er freedom's home, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever.